right, Tommy is back to tell us about Tommy's excellent adventures. This is going to be, I can't wait for this because you are doing some wild things. We've had people on the show who have run a lot of marathons, who've done a lot of different kinds of races, and they're fun to talk to, and I love those conversations. You're doing it in a way that's like, you're just running fast a lot for a very long period of time, and it's wild to see from afar. I can't wait to hear more about this. Tommy, tell people what you're doing, what this whole plan is before we start kind of detailing and figuring out what's going on.
First off, I like the Tommy's fun adventures. Right? What was it? Tommy's excellent adventures. I like that.
Yeah, Tommy's excellent
excellent adventures. I'm going to change
pulling movies from my long forgotten youth at this point.
long forgotten. I'm going to change the name. So I'm doing like this thing called we've deemed like the Redemption Tour, which consists of a marathon in September. That was Erie Marathon on 9/11. And then the next one was Chicago, and that was on the 9th of October. And then the final stop of the Redemption Tour is on the 6th of November in New York City. And I've just been going after it. The first one was to kind of re-qualify for Boston. It was actually the day before the cutoff to sign up for Boston. So like that was imperative that happened, because in Boston last year, I didn't have the best experience, didn't have the best race, or didn't have the race that I planned for due to a small injury. Finished the race, but just did not re-qualify. So I had to get that in there. I had qualified for Chicago with my same time that I qualified for Boston in the year before. So I was already there, and then going to run New York with New Balance. Aaron and I are going to be doing that. So that just made sense. Like, hey, might as well do all three. And I feel like I'm on this road to redemption, getting back to good health and good running and going back to Boston.
I love the shirts.
Yeah, Very nice. So the shirts are so stupid, man. Like, I got to say it. Like, because when I first saw it, Aaron created it. He's like, hey, I got this idea, man. You know, so he shot him at me. And I looked at him. I'm like, this is ridiculous. But I'm going to have it done. He's like, are you serious? Are you really going to do this? I'm like, yeah, might as well. So I put a feeler out there to see who wanted them. And like 15 people said that they would, you know, buy them. So I'm like, fine, I'll print them. So I printed them up and, did that. And I had to reorder some more, and it's just really cool. The vibe was like that old, like 90s hip hop, you know, tour energy. Like the shirt looks like one of those old, like,
yeah, I was gonna say 2006. I had like the 2006 early
that,
Little
really.
Wayne vibe.
Yeah, but early Little Wayne vibe got it from probably sooner than that. Like,
that's
he
fair.
Got that from,
yeah,
like, you know, like the, like the, there's like Tupac shirts out there that look like that. There's, you
okay,
know, and kind of like in that Nirvana feel too, like those really cool legendary tour vibes. But yeah, man, it was like, yeah, it was really cool. And I was excited to, like, yeah, like Master P back in the day, they had like those,
yeah,
type of shirts.
Yeah, that was the name
like,
I was
no
thinking about. I was,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it wasn't coming to me. I'm like,
yeah,
ah,
yeah. Yeah, no,
I
limit.
Be like, you know, the guy who tried out for the Hornets. What was,
yeah,
his,
yeah,
name?
Yeah, 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 that guy that was almost good enough to be in the NBA, but still very good enough to be a businessman and make a lot of money and make a lot of music. But yeah, so like the shirts are ridiculous. They have my face on them three times. Picking them up from the printer is very odd. Like, and he didn't say anything to me. Like, he didn't, like, go, like, oh, are you? Like, nothing. He just said, hey, I think they came out good. And I'm like, he didn't ask any questions. So I like that guy. But, yeah, it's been fun.
I love that. All right, so is this a redemption from Boston? Or what is the redemption?
Yeah, so it's, like, it's a redemption from Boston, but, like, it's also, like, a redemption at just the training. Because, I mean, the training is the hardest part. Like, if you're really, you know, if you got like a 16 week training block, that's a long time to be running. That's a long time to be consistent. It's asking the body to do a lot, you know. And so, I mean, that's where the injury came in. It wasn't like I didn't injure myself during the race, you know. So it's like a both, trying to get back to that, like, feeling good, you know, trusting the body vibe, getting the redemption on that, but then also getting the redemption on the training and to show myself like I can go through that process again.
Right, and you're a driven person. You've got a lot of goals, and you're a hard worker, extremely organized. I've been able to see this from behind the scenes. It's always remarkable to me to see it in person. With that said, from a running perspective, you know, you have leveled up a lot in the last 3 to 5 years. So you're hitting new levels all the time. And obviously, from an improvement, you know, see if you're like, say, graph out your improvement, right? You're going to obviously, and everyone's like this, you're going to hit a point where improvement becomes harder, mm-hmm. right? Because you're getting closer and closer, not to maybe your potential, but just the easy wins aren't coming, yeah. right? All the wins are a little bit harder to get to and things like that. So what's it been like for you as like, you know, running, say, a sub 305 marathon? Like, obviously it's hard work, but it's not yeah. like, it's not like this wild out of the box thing for you anymore. What's it like in terms of having goals and trying to like reach new levels and coming to grips with maybe how hard it can be now that you've had such a drastic improvement over the last 3 to 5 years and you're just an incredibly fast individual at this point?
I mean, I guess I never really thought about it like that. I mean, I'm just kind of doing, I do it because of the process. I like the process of, you know, that running showed me a lot, like, you know, running, you know, prior to like going through a training block and really having to trust it. Cause you, like I said, the other day, like you don't know if you're going to be able to run the marathon in the pace that you're training for. Like you literally have to trust the process. Like that whole cliche, trust the process, is so real because you can't really see during the training block that you're getting any better. Cause I mean, sometimes you have like these really good workouts that are okay, I think I'm ready, but you're getting physically and mentally, you're getting more tired as you go through this time. So you don't, it's like there's a lot of moments in there where you're like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do this. Cause like I'm super tired now and I only had to do 8 miles at my tempo or at my pace, you know?
We've all been there, right?
Right. So it's like, I have no idea. And you just really have to just trust and work on the recovery and all that. So like, I like that weird balance, and it's kind of showed me other things in life that you can go after, like crazy goals. You can do crazy things as long as you really focus on the process and just kind of trust it and make sure you stay diligent and consistent and all that. So I don't really look at it like it's getting tougher or different. I just kind of like, as I go, I base my next set of goals on what I've done. You know, like if my PR is 2:48 for a marathon, then you know, my coach and I take that, break it down into, okay, what's next for like a 5K? So you kind of build back up, like what would be your 5K goal? And let's work from here. And then if you go out and run a, you know, 20 minute 5K, then you can kind of extrapolate and say like, here's where I could be for the marathon. And what does that training look like? So I just like that change because it never stops. Like you can always go backwards and go, hey, I want to try to run a faster 5K. And if you do that, then you can blow that out to like what a training block would look like for a half marathon or a full.
So how did you view this fall in terms of, obviously you're enjoying the process, you're embracing the process, you're trying to improve through it. At the same time, you're going into these races. They're not just long runs, right? Yeah. So how did you
embrace? I try to think about it like they are.
So I'm just like, well, I'm paying $150 for a long run this weekend. See y'all later.
True.
So what is it like for you in trying to go in, how do you approach these races from a goal perspective, or how you want to, even if it's not a time goal, but just like how you want to run those races, and then how do you maybe like backfill the training to kind of match that intent?
Well, like the first one was definitely to requalify for Boston. So I mean, I had every goal of running like 256, 257, just because I felt like that would have been definitely a really decent effort, you know? I mean, I'm not saying like it's easy.
You're
saying
break sub 3 and give yourself a little bit of a margin?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, because I need 305, but I didn't, you know, I still needed it to be like a workout in a thing. I mean, because we're replacing it with like a really heavy, you know, Sunday long run, you know? So I definitely went after it there just to make sure it was like I got my number. I think I ran 255 something. I think. So for Chicago, though, that was a little different. Chicago was meant to be this very big progressive long run. It was supposed to be start at like 7:40 pace and slowly ease, you know, hit the gas and go through this into the end of the first 20, would have been down to 6:40, you know, like, so I was supposed to like have this minute of progression, but Chicago is an amazing race, amazing people out there, amazing crowds. Never hit the 7 minute pace at all. I started at like 6:58 or something like that. So I missed the whole thing, but forever. So I just had to like in that. That was a really hard race. I mean, it was a tough workout because I wasn't going into it expecting to have to get that close to the well. But it was really cool mentally though, because I got to make decisions on the fly. Like, okay, well, now that we're here, now that you, just like in life, like now that we're here, what do? Like, you can't go back and take the last 5 miles off and you use that energy. So how do you figure out the way to get to the rest of this? So to answer your question, like the first one was really about maybe going 85-90% just to get the job done. This one was supposed to be less effort, but Chicago ended up being a little more effort than it should have been. But I feel like I was okay and within reason. So I just got that done. I think I did 256 and some change. And so this one though, for New York, is supposed to be like the go after it, leave your legs in the city. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is.
All right, let's talk about Chicago then. So you're in that situation where you went out harder than expected. I think a lot of people, especially newer marathoners, can relate to that. Obviously, like, you basically went out still slower than, you know,
race pace. It wasn't, yeah, I didn't go like crazy out of the gate, but.
Right. It's not like you like went out at like half marathon pace or something, but went out faster than you anticipated going out, right? Yeah. So you're in that situation like, all right, now I got to like figure this out. So did you go into that race untapered? Like, how did that week leading up look?
Yeah, these weeks look weird though, because it's like, you know, I had to recover from the first marathon in September, so like that was a weird week, and then I ramped back up as quickly as possible to get back up to 50 something miles or whatever. The taper was very minimal. Like, I just didn't do a big effort like the Wednesday before. I normally work out on Wednesdays, so the workout on Wednesday before was similar to what a Wednesday prior to a normal marathon would be, because I always do a workout on Wednesday prior to the race.
Oh, let's talk about that. I know a lot of people, they always want to know what to do week of. So what's kind of worked for you?
So for me, it's like the last large big workout would be like 10 days out or so. And then there's like the long run. The biggest long run for me prior to a normal marathon is 14 days out. Then the Sunday, 7 days before, is like a 10-mile long run, typically very easy, keep it chill. Then the Wednesday prior to the race is typically like a 8x800s or 6x800s or something like that. Something that the total mileage of the day isn't even in the double digits, really. It's just like one of those runs that really gets your legs turning over a little faster than what you probably have been doing for the strength workouts that you've been, you know, putting in. Because a lot of times, like towards the end of a marathon training block, you're at like, you know, 10-mile tempos, 12-mile tempos, whatever it is that you're playing, and you're kind of more at that like marathon goal pace or half marathon goal pace, whatever your race is. So you're not used to like that quicker turnover that's kind of forcing you to get an 800 or 400 in and get it over with. So the workout the week of is typically shorter and quicker intervals just to get the wheels turning, so you kind of feel fresh, remind yourself what that speed feels like. So by the time you get back to like race day, then you kind of have that balance of strength and remembering like my legs do go fast. So it's like, I guess that's pretty standard. I mean, a lot of people's like last week is very chill. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, depending on the work you've done before, one small workout in the middle of the week doesn't really change much, at all, really.
Yeah, for me, it's more of always been like, all right, just don't screw it up. Like, better, definitely bearing on the side of,
yeah, don't leave your
being more chill than being more aggressive.
And that's the big thing too. Like, you don't, especially that week, that workout, that long run that has some work in it, or like the big last workout 10 days before. Like, it's very important for me to like hit those paces, but to not overdo that work because you're trying to prove to yourself something for the race. Like, you know, if you've feel like everything's, no matter what you've done, it is what it is. You've done what you've done. If you don't feel underprepared, you can't go the, you know, 2 weeks before and go crazy in a long run and blast through and try to prove like, oh, I can do this. Like, you have to just trust that you are where you are and it'll work out for you on race day. So never overdo those workouts, especially as you get closer to the marathon, to try to like prove or like, you know, kind of stroke your ego and say like, okay, I'm good. We're good to go. Because you can leave. I've heard people feel like they left their goal pace or their marathon out on like a training block somewhere because they went too crazy and they tried to push and feel great this one last time. And a lot of times you can mess up the peak of your ability.
Right. Yeah. And especially if it's kind of like, even not just like one day, it's like kind of like a couple days in a row, like you hammer a workout, then you hammer a long run, then you hammer another workout. And it's like, over that like 9 day span, you probably put out a ton of energy. It's like, it's kind of hard to get that back.
Yeah, sometimes. You can't. Yeah, you got to be careful with that.
So we're a couple weeks out from New York, as you know. How are the legs feeling? I mean, you put two sub-3-hour marathons in the bank already.
The legs are feeling good. I have this like thing that's bothered me. So I actually took 2 days off because it's like a upper left leg thing, like where the hinge point of your hip and all that. So it doesn't stop me from running. But the last workout, I pulled the plug because I don't want to finish this workout and then have to look back and say, dang it, if I had rested that day, maybe I'd be okay. So I think the fitness is there. My legs feel fine other than this one little issue that I'm kind of like trying to make sure goes away before next week. Because I want next week to be a nice solid week and then really start that taper into the week before New York. So legs are feeling good. I feel very confident in the ability and the pace, but I just want to make sure that like I'm as healthy as possible because, you know, I just don't want any Boston replays, you know?
For sure. And do you have people you're going to be running with in New York? Obviously there's like, it's a huge marathon. You have a lot of people but at the same time, like you're running at a pace that not a lot of people can match. So how are you going to work that?
Well, I mean, Aaron's going to be there. Aaron, my co-host of the PR project, he'll be there. He'll be at a slightly different pace than me. So he'll be out there running and going after PR. The pace that I'll be at, I'm assuming, New York is just a huge race. I mean, there's going to be so many people. It's not a fast course, really, but there's a lot of fast people that are going to be there. Fast is super subjective because, like, I'm definitely not fast in comparison to like some people, but
you're fast compared to everyone listening to this show. If it makes you feel any better.
I don't know. Well, I don't know.
This isn't the City's Mag podcast. We don't have a bunch track speedsters listening on repeat, you know, and the college track stars aren't tuning in to Rally Runner podcast. People like me. We're like 2:48. That's a good half marathon.
So like this isn't the AM shakeout. Okay.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a lot of people in my zone, you know, like right where I'm at. Like there'll be big packs of people that are running 240, 245, 250. You know, like I feel like there'll be some nice sections there. And I think I'll just find that group, stick in with them. Like I did for Glass City in 2021. The Glass City is not a big race. I mean, I think it's 1,500 people or maybe to 2,000 possibly for the full. And I think that year might've been even lower than that because it was the year after the pandemic. But even then, I was with a 250 group pretty much. It wasn't like a pacer, but we all were in that group looking for 250-ish. And there was like 9 of us all the way through mile 20. So like that's all you really need. If you're out there and like no matter what pace you're at, the cool thing about, you know, being above a 3 or a 3-hour marathoner or above is like you have those pace groups that are really good sometimes. So you really can like lock in. And even within those pace groups, sometimes pacers get a little too fast or a little too slow or something like that, you'll find people that will be spur off of those groups that you can lock in with because, like, you know, you'll hear the guy say, like, man, this guy's going too fast or going too slow. Then you,
I've never seen a pace group in the first 10 miles hit their pace.
I gotta tell you. So I was using the 3-hour group to try to like pull back, you know, and run with my friend Joe. And we were just running and we're looking down at the watch and we were at the back of Corral A on purpose. The Corral B 3-hour group caught up to us at like mile 3. Like they started 2 minutes after us. So we look down when we see this 3-hour sign. Our watch was at like at 6:40, 6:30 something. Every now and then, like they were surging and he was talking. The guy was like giving people like he was like a tour guide, like to your right, you'll see blah, 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 and you know, whatever. And I'm sure some people loved that, but like I knew he was going way too fast, you know, like so we just stuck with him. But I was just thinking about some of these other people around. They're like, I'm sure they're looking down like, I don't know if this is where it's supposed to be. But
some people might not be wearing a watch. They might be like, I'm just going to go on autopilot. Like I'm going to.
That may work out great for me. You know, then that's great. Like if you look up and you finish at 2:56 instead of 3. But
yeah, but if you can run a sub-3-hour marathon by starting the first 10 miles at 6:30 pace, then you don't need a pace group. It's like group becomes good for people who don't even need it in the first place. Like I was talking to some of my athletes heading into Chicago, and I was telling them the same thing. I was like, listen, I think pace groups, I feel two ways about them.
They can be perfect.
I feel two ways about them. I feel like in the first 10 miles, you just have to like completely leave them alone. Okay. Mm-hmm. for the exact reasons we just mentioned. I mean, I was at Eugene. It was an awful race for me. First 2 miles, I run. I think the first mile is uphill. It was like it's a very flat course, but the first mile is like a 60-foot incline or whatever. So not big, but it's a somewhat noticeable incline. I run it in 7:55. I got passed by three pace groups: the 8-minute pace group, the 8:15, and the 8:30. I ran 7:55 uphill.
Oh.
And I got passed by three pace groups in the first mile. I'm like, this crazy.
And then you passed them. So when did you pass them?
Well, I like DNF the race. But
okay, But we don't have to talk about this.
But on the other hand, so I think the first 10 miles, you have to just, unless like literally like your best friend is the pacer and you've been running with them for years, leave them alone. Second half of the race, completely different story, right? The second half of the race, they're probably right on pace. They probably got it dialed in. Right, last 6 to 8 miles, right around the wall. If you see a pace group, who cares what the pace is? Lock in with them, right? You're going to get the group effect, right? You can maybe like kind of shut off your brain for a little bit. You get a little bit of a drafting, because even at like 10-minute mile pace, drafting is real, right? Like you kind of tuck in. I think in the second half, especially the last 6 to 8 miles, if you see a pace group, hey, latch on, even if just for a little bit. I think it can be really helpful, but stay away in those first 10 miles. I know this is a kind of a random departure, but like I guess I feel pretty strongly about it.
No, I mean, it's real, though, because a lot of people's merit, you can, because someone, a pace group going out a little too fast, you know, can be amazing for someone who just needed the help to get to, like, feeling okay with that pace that they set. But then it also could make people bomb their races and extreme positive splits, you know what I mean, if you're going out too fast. So, yeah, you have to kind of trust your watch, trust your training. And then if you happen to find a group that is running exactly what, you know, on the numbers, then that's great. But yeah, you got to be careful with that, you know?
Yeah. So do you have, you don't have anyone you're going with to the race that like you already know that's kind of like in your range?
No, I mean, I know that there's going to be people that run the race that I know, but I just don't know what their paces are going to be.
Right.
I know that like, I'm not sure if Knox Robinson is running or not, but I would assume that if he's running, then I could probably run with him and figure out when I'll let him leave, because he's probably faster than me. And then, you know, Erica Stanley's going to be there. She's just, I don't know where she's going to be numbers wise, but I'm sure that within the days before, that's like, you know, like people say, like, you know, the first couple of days before the marathon in New York or in Chicago, that's like when you pick up your bib and all that stuff. That's important. Get your bib. You have to have that. But it's also really cool to network and see like who's running what that you may know or met on Instagram or whatever. So you can go to race day in that big corral with all these strangers and maybe have a couple of people that you didn't expect to run with that you met or talked to the days before.
Well, who knows? Maybe someone's listening to this podcast. We're talking all about it. What are you hoping to do? Maybe have someone reach out to you on Instagram. You're like, hey, I'm trying to run that time.
So my PR is 2:48. I want to PR. So like, I mean, I think that my goal right now is to get to around 2:45-ish pace and just hold for, I'm like a cruise control type of runner, except for Chicago, because that was designed to go a little faster, but I'm definitely a cruise control. I'm gonna get to the pace that I want to get to, and I'm just gonna stay there for as long as humanly possible. And then if at the end, you know, I can speed up, I will. If I can't, I'll stay there, and I'll hopefully still hit that goal.
Got it.
That's
so
like
kind
my, that's
go up
my
the
whole
bridge,
mindset.
Go down the bridge, and then try to lock into pace.
Yeah, like so. I've heard that like that first. I've heard the first mile is super deceiving, because it's like you're struggling up that hill, but then all of a sudden you bomb down on the other side, and then you go into like, it's quiet, 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 and then all of a sudden you're into the city, into the crowd, and they say like the first few miles or first five, really, you can look down and realize you're way quicker than what you're supposed to be because of just that energy and because that downhill lets you breathe a little bit. So I plan to get to the bottom of that hill and almost hit the brakes, like just, okay, slow down, back to the pace, because I'm sure at the bottom of the hill I'll be going much faster than the design phase.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to be running downhill with the brakes on.
No. You got to just go bomb into the city. And then, like, maybe a quarter mile into the city after you get the vibes and get your chills and all that stuff, pull it back, slow down. And so, a quick question, too. So, do you, because you coach folks, right?
Yeah.
So, do you ever tell people to, if they need be, like, stop and drink water, like, drink Gatorade or whatever, like, stop at the aid stations?
It depends on their ability going into the race, right? Kind of their fitness level. So I've had people who kind of went into a marathon who were like, they really wanted the marathon experience. They wanted to run a marathon very badly. They probably haven't had the lead up that you would traditionally want heading into a marathon. So they're kind of viewing it more as like, this is just an adventure. This is not like there might be some walking here. The last part of the race is going to be pretty tough, but like they're just, this is what they want to do. So we're going to help them do it. For those people, I always say like, hey, walk through the water station, walk through the aid stations, right? Like there's probably a good chance that you're going to be walking through part of this race anyway, because you're just not quite ready to run 26 miles right now. So going through the water stations and the aid stations, walking through them is huge because it does kind of reset you. It does take some of the pounding off, and it allows you to get all the nutrition and water you need. Because again, these people, by advent of what I just said, are obviously going to be out there for a long time. So they need this to replace the water, the electrolytes, and the food. Right. So for those people, I tell them walk through the aid stations. It's only going to be like 30 seconds to 60 seconds. Right. But it will help you out immeasurably. Right. Almost treating it like an ultra in a sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like really making sure that you make the most of those times. For other people, my feeling is like if you can manage eating and drinking on the run or even on the jog, maybe it's just a slowdown to make sure you can get it in, then that's fine. But I don't, besides the people who are just viewing the day as an adventure rather than a race, I usually don't say walk through the aid stations unless like they really are having trouble getting water down.
So the reason why I asked that, because I stopped a couple times in Erie just to make sure I got the, because I'm really bad at the pinching the cup thing.
It's tough. It's
so
hard.
People say, oh, it's so, just do this. Just, I've done that. I get it. It always ends up my nose, on my shirt, something. Like it never fails. So, and I feel like I take less fluid that way. And the anxiety of like choking on Gatorade mid run is pretty intense. So I've stopped a couple times in Erie, but I stopped a bunch of times in Chicago. Like, didn't even care. Like I stopped, stood, and took a couple swigs of Gatorade or whatever I was drinking to make sure I was good. But
and for you, there was no pressure. It was a long run. So did you feel like it worked for you? Because it was kind of a nice way to experiment.
Well, I feel like it did because I've slowed down before in races that, you know, because Chicago was definitely different, and I know that, and I'm just trying to like process like how I'm gonna handle New York though still. Because, like, I felt like every time I slowed down, it was only for 10 seconds. And then when I started running again, it wasn't like I lost touch of the person or people that I was running near. You know, like, I ended up catching them within a quarter mile anyway without having to put on this big surge. It wasn't like I'm not chasing Eliud Kipchoge here, you know? So it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do in New York. Because I do feel like, you know, liquids and, you know, water and Gatorade can be extremely important. I mean, because that's the last thing you want is to be at mile 23 and you're having the race of your life and you are just dehydrated and it's too late at that point. So like, I'm trying to figure out like where I place, like how I handle it.
Well, I think also it's kind of like also like how you do it, right? I think if you're going to go the strategy of like, all right, and maybe it's even like a game time decision. You're planning on not doing it, but in the moment you're like, I missed the last water stop. Yeah. I need to get something at this one. I have to like make the most of this next one. I think the key would be like, all right, making sure that you're maybe getting stuff at the end of the table. It's usually a string of tables, but like at the end of the station, right? Because you don't want to like stop at the beginning, because then all of a sudden you're going to be like, there's going to be people coming at you.
Yeah, yeah. You got to be careful where you stop either
in,
for sure.
I'm not even saying this like, don't get in anyone's way. I'm like, it could be kind of bothersome to you. People like kind of going around you to get stuff. Like,
yeah, definitely don't get in anyone's way though. Because you can hurt people that way, like by
just
stopping.
That's true. And I'm saying, even if you were like purely selfish about it, which you never would be, you still wouldn't want to do it that way because it would just be disruptive, right? Yeah. So you want to maybe like aim for like near the end of the station to get your stuff there so that where you stop is almost like after the tables. So you're not like in like the target zone of like the group of people around you, especially if it's a more of a condensed group. And that way, like you're at least able to like relax and get your stuff in as opposed to maybe the front of the table. And all of a sudden it's like, oh gosh, I'm in the middle of like a storm over here.
Then you're playing double dutch to get back in, you know, So I think it's definitely going to be a game time decision. Cause I think, in the past I've had like issues like hamstring kind of like tightening up a little bit. And I feel like that was probably because of like lack of hydration. And in that race, I was so adamant about this time that I needed to have that I probably just didn't get as much fluids as I could have because, you know, I'm really shitty at the drink thing.
Are you a salty sweater?
When you say, like, so how do you know you're a salty sweater when you finish and you got sweat salt rings around your face, right?
Well, I mean, I think everyone gets, especially in the summer, everyone gets that. I think it's more of like, is it on your clothes?
Right? No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Like, yeah. I guess, like, for because the patches that they sell now, like, those are garbage. Like, I think that's, like, the next great thing to come out. Like, they can get, like, actual salt testing stuff for people. I think it would be so helpful. But not just, like, the labs.
You got to create it, man. Yeah, great.
This isn't like a corporate meeting. Like, be careful what you suggest. You might be in charge of it.
I know, right?
So, I think, like, basically, like, if your clothes, like, are ridiculous, like, you have like salt salty. Crystals everywhere, right? Then, like, it becomes a big issue. It's one of those things where, like, you can't calorie your way out of it. Like, you have to, like, you know, salt sticks
I've been taking salt sticks lately before a race. I don't take them during the race because I don't think that that's a big issue for me. But okay. I feel like the knowing that I took it, I feel like it probably helps with push back some cramps a little bit.
For sure. And I think you have a nice window, too. I think there's like I think it's like 24 to 36 hour window where you can kind of increase your salt intake into a race. And it does.
See, this is what nobody talks about. Everybody's talking about carbs. I want salt and carbs now.
You can put both, man. Who doesn't like pretzels?
Yeah, right. Except pretzels. Yeah. Or just get like really salty spaghetti.
Right. And I think salt definitely helps in the moment, too. I don't want to act like it doesn't, but I think you can build up, just like glycogen, you can build up a little bit of a reservoir going in that could probably help you out. It's not like you're running like 100 miles either. You know, I think especially, and nor are you running a summer race, right?
Yeah,
like, I'm in the Northeast right now. Like, it's not that hot.
It's cold.
Yeah. So you should be good to go. Sure. Yeah. Well, this is exciting. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll be right back. All right, we're back. So
And we're back.
It was about a 4 second break in the conversation between me and Tom. I didn't even take a pause.
But I appreciate that commercial that you just did. It was great.
It was great.
I think you did a really great job.
That was a really good ad. Everyone should go use that code and or visit that website and or download that app, whatever that app was.
Do it.
So let's talk about the mental side of this because this is a lot to take on. You're doing it very publicly. You got a t-shirt. You got Kira D'Amato buying the t-shirt. She's rocking it. You got all this stuff going on. Also, and this doesn't get, I don't think we talk about this as much as we should on the podcast, especially after marathon season, or maybe even before we should address it, is once you have these big efforts, there can be this mental lag that happens afterwards because it's a goal race and you have this physical exhaustion oftentimes can get combined with a mental exhaustion and bouncing back from that. And how do you do that? So just, I guess, first of all, as you're going into this, doing it publicly, how are you able to mentally compartmentalize the effort from the broadcasting of it and trying to make it so you're not, you know, that judgment, negative judgment isn't something that's bringing you down?
In the first marathon, I absolutely, like, at one point, maybe, like, earlier in the race, I thought about, like, dang, like, if I don't qualify for Boston in the first race of this tour, then the whole tour is off. You know, like, it doesn't even make any sense. So I definitely had that thought, but then I just kind of, like, brought back to the moment. And that's my whole thing is always just trying to get back to the moment and be, like, in the now and control what you can control and all that, all those mantras, you know, one step at a time, 1 mile at a time vibe. So I know that, like, I feel really good that the first two went well. In Chicago, I didn't have a bunch of pressure just because it was, like, more of a workout, just get it done. But I definitely knew that I needed to finish the race, so there is that pressure there, and that's okay. And I've always been very public with, like, my goals. In the beginning, you know, of this running journey, I've always said I want to qualify for Boston. I said what I wanted to run 250, you know, before I ran 248. So I think that, you know, if you're okay with having that, like, somewhat, like, perceived pressure, I mean, because it's not really pressure. I mean, who cares if you don't do it? You know, like, no one cares. But, you know, if you're okay with announcing it, it is kind of cool because it is, like, that accountability, and it does help pull through some of those workouts. It does help you feel like you have more, not more riding on it, but more support, actually. You know, like, even if there's people out there that want to see you fail, like, you don't know that. So it sometimes feels like you're doing it for yourself, but you're also doing it for the people that have been cheering you on and watching you through your journey and following you and liking your videos and all that stuff. So I kind of use it for more of a mental help and game, because I just feel like I'm not alone. Because even though, you know, we're out there in this race with thousands of other people, sometimes, you know, running is a very lonely effort, you know. And when you can think about, like, those people that were rooting for you because you announced your goal, that helps me a lot too. And then afterwards, I don't know if I've really had like the marathon blues yet, except for like after Boston, but that's because I was upset with the time. But I think that it's always helpful to, you know, kind of reflect a little bit, like after it happens, like after, if you hit your goal or not, it's cool to take that time to go back and see like what you learned during this marathon training, like what you learned about yourself during that day or during that race, instead of thinking like, oh, what do I do next? Like, you can take that time to reflect and take those lessons that we all learn from running and move on to the next thing, set the next goal, whether it's for through work or, you know, family or the next race that you want to sign up for. And I'm definitely a big signer upper of races. So like, it's always like, you know, after New York, I know I have Boston in April, and I want to do like a half marathon probably in March, you know, so it'll be some time off, much needed, and then get back into it. So yeah, set another goal, whether it's work related, family, or running.
And how do you approach the couple days leading into a race, especially like when you're going to Chicago and then this time going to New York, where you may have obligations, whether they're media obligations or other things? Like, you do have a situation where you've worked with various companies, which is really obviously an exciting thing. It's not a negative, but you know, there's stuff that comes with that. Or I guess I should say and or. Just, you know, going to meetups and seeing people and being just in a very upbeat, energetic environment, which for some people, I'm looking at myself here, like, that is fun, but also can drain me sometimes of that energy that I'm trying to store for later. How do you approach that sort of situation?
I approached it in two different ways. Like, so Boston, I think I had the injury in the back of my mind, so I kind of like wanted to live it up on the other side. I mean, I'm not a partier at all by any means, but I definitely did a lot. Like, I had four events prior to the race day. So like, that was a lot going on. And I think I did that wrong. I should have been more conservative with my energy and time and mental space. But then Chicago, I shout out to Gary is a runner. Everybody go follow Gary is a runner. Gary is a guy that I run with, and we actually drove over to Chicago from Detroit together. And we stayed in the hotel together, and we both had like this vibe of like, definitely wanted to perform on Sunday, but also enjoy some of the experience. So we did a few things like here and there and bounced around a little bit, but we were very adamant about like eating and then like, you know, sleeping. You know, like, you want to enjoy as much as possible, because it is a world major. It is a big race. It is a thing that you've been training for. But try your best to, like, toe that line of, like, set a couple things you want to do during the day that's, you know, intense or, like, energy, you know, zapping. Do a couple of those things, but then make sure you've prioritized, like, sitting down, sleeping, you know, all that stuff. Like, I posted something yesterday. It's like, I don't know when I heard it, but it was like, as you get closer to a marathon, it's like, you know, don't stand when you can sit, and don't sit when you can lay down. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's a cycling mantra. That's
is
like,
it? Okay.
Yeah, for cycling, they say the whole thing. Don't walk upstairs if you can, you know, stay on the same floor. Don't stand if you can sit. Don't sit if you can lay down.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I missed the first part of that. I didn't hear that somebody that was, must have been a runner and cut off the stairs part. But yeah, like, so it's like that. That's like the goal, is to, whenever you can, enjoy, but then make sure you prioritize what you're there for. And I think I did that much better in Chicago, because I felt great the morning of, and everything went well. And I didn't wake up thinking like, damn, like, I wish I had gotten some more sleep, you know?
And you're someone like with you know, with Run 313 and a lot of other stuff you're doing as well. You got the big long runs. I forget the exact name of it, but you have the big long runs that pop up in around your area that you plan. It seems like you are an extroverted person. You're at least out in the community a lot, and you obviously embrace being in your local running community. Mm-hmm. With that said, is out being in groups in that social environment, is that like, does that give you energy? Does it kind of take energy away from you? Or is it kind of like it can be an either or situation?
Yeah, I'm actually a fairly like introverted person. And it's probably hard to believe because I put myself in very extroverted positions. So actually when I started running with We Run 313 in Detroit, I didn't go there for friends. I just went there because like, oh, this is a cool vibe. Looks like a really cool experience. But you know, I definitely gained friends and some I would consider brothers at this point, that push each other to reach goals and train together, work together and all this other stuff. So that gives me like energy just being around people that have the same type goals as me. So I think that's what a big plus to finding a group that's in your area. Even if you are introverted, there's going to be an introverted person there that just also doesn't want to run alone. You know, there's going to be people like you. I think that's one thing we think, that we're just always alone or we're the only person that's like us and all this other stuff. But if you get with groups of people that have similar goals, which is like running or running faster or BQ or whatever the goal is, you'll find somebody that kind of helps you just kind of continue. So like those groups help me just continue and stay, you know, diligent in the practice of running and finding out what I can do. But yeah, the big ass long run is really cool. It's called the big ass long run. I've done two of them so far. And
you guys have a pretty wide range of people there. I mean, you got like people who are like trying to be Olympians, and you have other people who are just like new to running. It's a whole group.
Yeah, it was because in a lot of cities you don't see the groups actually get together from the cities. You see, there's a bunch of different groups in every city you go to that just know of each other. They're fine. They're not like, it's no beef. It's not like grease or whatever.
Well, sometimes they have a little undercurrent.
I was going to say, there's definitely beef in some groups. But like, you know, it started very selfish. It started a vain effort. It was like, we were running one day. We saw this big Peloton of bikes go by. And I was like, damn, Joe, that'd be so sweet if we had a bigger group.
Joe Robinson.
Yeah. So like, a bunch of us are running, and it was only like maybe five of us. But so that's like the, you know, in most groups, there's like four, five, six people that kind of just in the long run will start pulling away just because of their different goals. And like, and the bigger the group, the better, obviously. But I was like, dang, it'd be sweet if we had, you know, 20 of us that could do that. You know, that'd be dope. And he was like, put it together, you know? So I'm like, so I took the challenge, and then I reached out to all the groups in the area and said, hey, you know, we need to do this for our area to get us together. And, you know, don't talk about diversity, like bring it together. Let's do something that's diverse. Let's do something. And like you said, it was diverse, you know, race wise, but it was also diverse in talent and ability. And it was just a fun day. I think we had like the first one was like 80 something people came out to rock with it. The second time was closer towards like these marathons. So it got a little weird. I think it was maybe 60 people, but that's still pretty dope. But something like that is very energizing because it's like you get to talk to people that are going after goals that may be different than yours, but it's like to remember when, you know, not to sound like better than, but like just, you know how it is when somebody calls you about a podcast and you're looking for like, you know, they're just looking for tips. It kind of reminds you of like, mm-hmm. I remember feeling that exact same way. And you realize like how similar you now still feel to some of that, you know, like. No matter what our goals are, people are like, oh, you're really fast, Tommy. But I probably feel the same thing about my pace and my effort and the things I've learned from this thing as someone that's just trying to break five or six or seven or whatever. You know, we all have like this same thing. It's just, we're just running at a different pace. We still have the same commitment level at times, the same pain out there. Like you think that like 205 marathoners don't suffer in a race. I'd venture to guess that they probably go through darker moments than
they're running at threshold pace
the whole time. Like, so the people go, oh, you make it look so easy. Like our faces are, we're just used to making our faces look like we're not in pain. You know,
right.
We're all suffering. We're all suffering.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great point. No, it's funny. Cause like, no matter,
I didn't even answer your question. I don't think, but no, I don't like answering questions.
Well, it's like no matter like what we've achieved or the things that we've done in life, maturity wise, or mm-hmm. like even how as we age, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm an N of one, right? I only know how I think. but it seems as though like our inner monologue like never changes with it, with context, not really. Right? Like, it's always like my inner monologue has like, it really, I feel like it's no different than it was when it was like 12. Like, I just feel like I'm still like that person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, I'm me. Like, everything else may have changed, but I'm still me, you know? And it's funny because like you said, like, you, unless you get reminded of certain things, you lose track of your context within certain things, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, that's why injuries can be such a crazy thing. You're like, I'm never going to take running for granted again. It's like, no.
And then you take running for granted again as soon as you feel better.
Take running for granted in like 10 days. You're going to take it for
10
granted.
Days.
Yeah. But like, you like, unless you're jolted out of it, like you don't notice it. And then it's so easy just to fall back into it, which is probably, again, you know, I guess that's like, it's almost like 51st dates. Like every day can't be a brand new wild experience, right? There is going to be some defaults and some groove lines that we follow. But no, you bring up some good points for sure. So
yeah,
we got to talk about the shoes too. Let's talk about the shoes. So you're going to New York as part of a New Balance thing. You love all sorts of shoes. So let's talk about the shoes that you've worn so far in terms of like your race day stuff. And then we'll talk about what you're going to be wearing in New York. I feel like I have a good idea because it's a very specific model.
Yeah, it's pretty,
That's probably going to be giving me your choice.
First marathon in Erie, I wore the Saucony Pro 3, which had just come out. And I think I've talked about it with you before.
I'm wearing them on Sunday for my marathon.
It's a good shoe. It's one. So the thing about the Saucony Pro 3 is it's so much better than the Pro 2. Like, it's not even, I don't even know what they were doing with Pro 2 or Pro 1. But so Pro 3 is actually in the conversation to me as one of the top marathon running shoes that's out right now. And I loved it, I never thought about, you know, sometimes you try a shoe, like as a person that, you know about trying on shoes and things, you'll get in a race and you'll be like, this wasn't the one I should have picked. You know, like I should have picked a different one. I have this other one that I love. Why didn't I pick that one? Didn't think about that at all in the marathon, which is the first one was very important because I wanted to make sure I requalified. The second marathon,
Chicago.
Hold
on, let me just talk about the Pro Thief real quick. What I like about it for me is, and I'll have to hear your opinion on this, like I feel like there's a range of different kind of like, even like the best marathon race shoes, there's still a range of like, some are more snappy and some are more bouncy, right? Like the Alpha Fly is on the bouncy side, and maybe like the first Asics Metaspeed Sky is like on the snappy side, right? And like for me, I like the Saucony Pro 3 because it was like right in the middle. Like it had some snap and it had the bounce, and for me, like I like the bouncy side of stuff, but it was like, it was comfortable enough where I didn't have to worry about it, but it had some quality bounce, which I was a big fan of. So for me, like that was kind of what I was looking for, and it kind of hit the right notes for me.
I agree. I think that it's the closest thing that I felt to like, to the reasons why I like the Vaporfly, the Nike Vaporfly. So because of Nike Vaporfly was very bouncy, but then it also was snappy, and it the turnover was quick and easy. And the Saucony Pro 3 does that for me, and I think it's actually a more comfortable shoe. Like I wouldn't necessarily go
for
like a long run in the Vaporfly unless I had to.
Yeah.
But I would do easy runs in the Pro 3, tempo, you know, intervals, marathon, anything. It's like, it's one of those shoes that you could use for every situation.
For me, for the half, it would be a hard decision for me between the Vaporfly and the Pro 3, but for a marathon it's not a hard decision. Like I have both. They're equally worn.
Yeah.
But for me, for a marathon, it's definitely the Pro 3.
Okay.
Over Vaporfly.
Yeah, I think because I've done two marathons in the Vaporfly, I definitely was like running in the Pro 3 and was like, okay, we're good. You don't have to think about these anymore. Just roll.
All right. Chicago.
All right. So Chicago, I wore the Alpha Fly, which is funny because I've talked bad about it in the past. So I ran a few different runs in them leading up to it. And just to
which
be honest.
One? Which Alpha Fly? One or two?
The one.
Okay.
Nike hasn't sent me the two yet. so they, I think I got hyped up with Eliud Kipchoge and Kyrie D'Amato in Berlin. And I had done a couple long runs or workouts in the Alpha Flies prior to that. So I'm like, you know what? They're going to save my legs. They're nice and bouncy. I just need Chicago to be over and done with and run well. So I said, I'm going to wear the bounciest shoes that are out there. I wore them. I'm not in love at all by far. I think they're good shoes. I think they're better than I thought they were, but I still don't understand. I still don't see the hype necessarily. The only reason why I don't like them is, for me, I'm a more turnover or oriented. I need it to feel like an easier turnover. The more tired I did get in that marathon, I felt like I just had to do too much with the shoe. And I could maybe just from my cadence and my stride or my whatever form, maybe it's just not my thing. But others, they are very bouncy. They are very forgiving. But they're just not for me. I think it's just too much shoe for me. So I won't hate on them anymore.
The quick form. I hear it. That makes sense because they are heavier and like you land on them a certain way, they get that bounce. Yeah.
And if you're missing like the landing, for me, they're just such an obvious point of where you're supposed to land to do well in them. So like I felt like you have to like land there, and you're mentally like, I have to land here because why would I not land here? The freaking pod is there. You gotta land there. So it seemed like it was just too much for me to think about. I don't know.
Right. Know who I think would be like, and I know he wouldn't. I know he wouldn't do it because he runs in Hokas all the time. But know who like would be tailor made for that shoe is Hella.
Hella, yeah, Hella.
Hella is like tailor made for that shoe. His form.
Hella runs on
exactly
his toe.
How you'd want to land. His big long strides. Like I feel like he's like the exact person for that shoe.
Yeah, or Eliud Kipchoge.
Or Eliud Kipchoge, of course. Yeah, of course, they were made with him in mind. Him. So
yeah, but then even him, like, he wore the Pro 2. He wore the 2. I mean the Alphafly 2. But he went back to the Vaporfly for a second, you know?
Right. I mean, you think about like how far they're running, because I'm sitting here like, oh, for a half marathon, I might wear the Vaporfly over the Pro 3. Like, he runs the marathon the time I run the half. So I guess from a time on feet perspective, it's like the same question.
That's kind of crazy. In Berlin, I was watching, like, I woke up because I'm an idiot. I woke up 3 in the morning to watch Berlin. So I really resonated with that Laura Green post that she put up about like I watch it for hours, you know. So I woke up in the morning and watched that. And then when Eliud Kipchoge was finishing, the people were still, they're still doing corral like gun time.
Is that right?
When he was finishing, they were letting off people still from the corral in the front. They showed like a quick video back, and they were still doing like the Berlin clap. And I'm like, holy crap.
Can you imagine like, being in the corral and them announcing that Eliud Kipchoge just
broke the world record?
They definitely did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, they were going. I mean, they had to.
Yeah.
And then you go out. And at that point, if you're starting 2 hours after the elite, like, do you want to hear that somebody just broke the world record? Or do you, just say, like, yo, who?
I think you can. Yeah, because it's not like, I think it'd be more disheartening if you're like, someone who's like, hey, I'm trying to break 3. And then, like, you're about to start, and they're like, Eliud Kipchoge is through 25K. You're like, what? What? Like, I thought I was good. This guy's at 25K? I haven't started yet.
If you haven't started yet,
you're like, you know, like, someone who, like, is playing pickup basketball for, like, the fifth time isn't, like, comparing themselves to LeBron James. But, like, this is, like,
so
you kind of have, like, that discrepancy.
Yeah, yeah. Don't announce to me that where he is. And I feel like I just watched him leave. Don't tell me he's at 5K already. Like, he just left. He just left.
I can still see him. What do you mean he's at 5K?
Right. What do you mean, sir? I can see the lead car right there.
Right. That's great. All right. So, and then for New York, there's a pretty obvious choice here,
obvious
right?
choice. New Balance, Super Comp, Elite 3.
Right. Because it's not colorway. The RC Elite anymore. It's the SC
Elite now. So they took 3 instead of just going back to 1. I don't have the shoe yet. So New Balance, if you're listening, like, I think that'd be great. So I think it's going to be a good shoe. I like the RC Elite 2. I hope the SC Elite 3 is a little, a decent upgrade to the 2, because I don't think the 2 for me would have been like a marathon shoe for me. Like, I think it's not, you know, that bounce to snap ratio. I don't think it had that quite right to me in comparison to like the Pro 3 or a Vaporfly. So I'm hoping that they answered some of those questions. I've seen Believe in the Run, they have them. They say they like them, and I trust them when it comes to shoe reviews, so we'll figure it out.
Yeah, they definitely say they like them. I'll tell you, I'm a huge, you know this, I'm a huge fan of the RC Elite 2.
Yeah.
For me, those are shoes, like, I could wear those all day. I just could.
Yeah, they're good shoes. Yeah, good shoes.
If I ever ran like... If you were like, hey, Matt, you have to run Comrades this year, right? So 52 miles
RC Elite 2.
On pavement. Be like, I'd be wearing the RC Elite 2. Like, yeah, I can wear those all day. They're super comfortable, and they have a high. They have like the 31 stack and the 4 foot. I'm a 4 foot striker. Like for me, like that is that would be the shoe because it's just super duper comfortable.
So what are you picking? A Pro 3, Saucony Pro 3, or RC Elite 2?
So I'm picking the Pro 3 for the marathon this weekend. Yeah. But the thing is, like, I've run enough in it to know that I like it.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. It's definitely more stiff than the RC Elite 2. That also is no question. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the RC Elite 2 would be like the kind of shoe if you're like, hey, Matt, in 2023, you can only wear one shoe.
Okay.
The whole year. All your training, you can only wear one shoe the whole year. I'd be like, RC Elite 2.
Yeah, period. Okay.
End of story.
I think that's...
The only thing that I had trouble with on it would be like... And I didn't have trouble with this, but I know Ed Budd, who does the YouTube reviews, like he had trouble with it, like on slick conditions. He lives in England, so like it's always raining. I never had a problem with it. I think he fell the first time he wore a shoe. Like it's like, I love this shoe, but the outsole, man, I just like hit the deck. I didn't have trouble with it. I mean, I could see how it doesn't have like a ton of grip for sure. But besides that, like that shoe fits me in my cadence and my running style. It fits it like a glove.
Yeah.
I mean, I ran CIM last year and I was not ready for it. I just ran it because I was in town and I was doing media stuff. I was out there for a long time. I was, I finished in like 4:19 or something. And like, I wasn't ready to run a marathon, but I just wanted to do it to do it. Mm-hmm. And I never had a problem with the shoe. Not once. My feet felt great the whole time.
I think they're very, I think the RC Elite 2 and the Saucony Pro 3 are very similar, except for like that ratio that it feels like there's a little more energy return in the Pro 3. I think that's like the difference for me.
100%.
So hopefully the Elite 3, the New Balance Elite 3 has gotten closer to where like that Saucony is.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. For sure. I mean, shoot, even Saucony changed up their formula, right? If you compare the PowerRun PB, it's the same name. If you compare the PowerRun PB of the Pro 3 with PowerRun PB in the Pro 2, it's not the same.
No.
Just isn't, right? I mean, even if you compare it to the Saucony Tempest, which I'm a big fan of that shoe, but if you just touch the foams in both shoes, you're like, these are not the same things.
Right.
Like, they're the same name, but they're not the same.
No. So yeah, I think they definitely stepped it up a little bit with that. So that's cool to see.
Well, I'll tell you, the colors of the SC Elite 3 for the New York version are great. Like, I'm on like a hiatus. I'm not buying any more shoes for a very long time. I have way too many shoes, but I'm like, every day I look at them, like, I don't know if I really like them.
I like them a lot, but I'm also interested to see what their inline colors are going to be. Because it's a New York colorway. It has a New York Marathon's, stick or logo on the tongue. So it's very, very much so New York City Marathon. But I can't wait to see like what the inline colors would be like. So because New Balance has done a really good job with color schemes just in general over time, I think that has a lot to do with like their lifestyle side of things as well. They know how to play with colors pretty good, so I can't wait to see what like the mass offerings are going to be next year when they come out.
Gotta think there's definitely gonna be some of that lime green, right? Because of like
something,
because like the, they've really been hitting that hard with the Rebel 3.
Yeah, they did Rebel 3
with the SC Racer. And with the SC Trainer, like the lime green was like the first colorway in every one of those releases.
Yeah, that would actually be an interesting color to see on that shoe because it has definitely looks. It reminds me. It's like a little bit. Looks a little bit like the SC Trainer a little bit, like the way the shoe kind of is shaped, but just on a lower profile. If you see the outsole or the midsole, they definitely have that big groove or whatever down the middle to kind of help with that energy turn and all that stuff, and definitely can't run on trails apparently because you'll get a rock. It's so easy to get a rock stuck in the SC
I can't
trainers.
Yeah, same with the Puma RC, the Puma Deviate Elite. They have the cutout to show you the thing, and you're like, I can't wear this on gravel.
It'll be quick.
Yeah, because if you get the lime green and you match it with like a dark blue or a dark purple, like it really matches well with that.
Yeah, for sure. Like that'll be a good race day kit vibe, because that's important. Yeah. Race day kits are that's everything. Forget
no
your
wonder
training
I've
box.
Been struggling.
But yeah, if you're out there listening and you're running and you're preparing for a race. Hydration, gels, all that stuff. That's important, obviously. Go get yourself some UCAN. But you get the kit has to be tight. Like you gotta go, it has to be right. Like you gotta take some time, you gotta lay it out, you gotta make sure everything matches and you feel good. You know,
so are you going headband?
I'm definitely going headband. That's my thing now. Like I definitely have to have a head tie.
Not okay.
So definitely a head tie. It's probably gonna be black.
Okay.
I do arm sleeves every time.
So you're not going to go Cobra Kai with the headband?
Well, yeah, it is kind of Cobra Kai because Cobra Kai head tie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because they got the headbands that's like, you know, like sweatbands or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I'm doing head tie.
We're not talking about the Tobias Harris.
No, definitely Cobra Kai head tie. And then arm sleeves, gloves, and let it rip.
Okay, so are arm sleeves a keep it warm type thing, or is it more of a sweat thing?
It's a vibe thing.
Oh,
it will help with temperature, obviously, because it's not going to be like hot, you know. But it does help with temperature, so I can wear the singlet without feeling like I'm going to be too cold. But it is definitely a vibe thing. I've run without them before, and then at the end of the race, I saw my pictures. I'm like, dang, I should wear my arm sleeves.
Okay.
Just because I just like the way it looks. It's you know, you want to be like.
Is there a certain color, a certain design? What's the.
No, like,
if it's a vibes only purchase, then you really have to dial in the look.
Yeah, I mean, well, they got to match. They got to kind of match and play off what the rest of the kit looks like. So for this case, I think I'm going to have on black half tights. So I'm going black arm sleeves. I think in. What did I wear in. I don't even know what I wore in. I wore black ones in Chicago. But yeah, I go white. Sometimes you gotta go white. Sometimes you gotta go blue. You know, who knows, man? There's so many colors out there.
Well, yeah. Well, see if you're wearing the SC Elite 3, it has a very distinctive and prominent blue.
Yeah.
But so you might have to go white and black because you don't have the wrong blue.
No. You can't have the wrong blue. Yeah. No, guys, come on. Shame. So you gotta go in this case, you gotta go either black or white. You know, if your shoes are a different weird color and you don't have the thing to match, black or white is always a good option, you know, depending on what the rest of the kit looks like.
Right. Like last night I was watching the NFL game. So it was, what was it? It was the Cardinals versus the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cardinals were in their all blacks with red highlights. And one of their defensive backs was in like, basically, their shoes looked like the Giannis shoes. So it was all yellow. And it was like, it was distracting.
Yeah.
And like looking at like the defense. Because like, you can't keep your eye off this guy. Like, I think he was like.
You're like, there he is.
I think he might have been the nickelback because he was like kind of like over the slot basically the entire second half. And I think they were playing quarters because he was kind of back farther. But anyway, and he, like, I kept looking at this guy. I'm like, he's wearing the yellow shoes. The whole team is black on black on black.
Yeah, and he's got
the yellows on. I'm like,
gotta have
this
guy.
This is like the shooting guard on any basketball team in history who has to wear different color shoes than everyone else on the team. It's always the shooting guard. Usually on an NFL team, it's the wide receiver who does that. But I was surprised to see a defensive back go that route.
Yeah, and you gotta do what's gonna have you stand out just a little bit. You know, you want.
Then make sure you don't get picked on because then people will see you even more.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like if you go that route, like you better perform.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I don't know, because the thing about race day photos is as long as you're looking decent and you don't have any downstep, no one knows where you are in the race. No one knows that you where you finished at based on that picture. So make you know, you want your pictures to look tight. When you see your camera guy coming, compose yourself. That's why, I'll tell you too. That's why shades are great.
Oh.
Putting on some shades because a downstep with shades on is not the same as a downstep without glasses on. You know, throw on to something.
You're worrying about your eyes. I'm worrying about the double chin. See, like for me, the downstep is more double chin related.
No,
than
I'm just saying.
Else. The shades can't help. I might have to wear a buff around my neck.
No. You'd be surprised. Like if they can't see like that section, like your cheekbones, like drop down an inch.
Yeah.
You know, they can't see that separation in the life, like leaving your body, then. It's good. So throw some shades on, get some whatever. I'm not, you know, I don't know any brands to say to get, but go get you some.
Everyone and likes Gooder, pictures, right? They like the $20 bucks, they don't bounce.
Yeah, and your pictures will be great, you know. Just it's a cheat code for sure.
There you go. That sounds good. Tommy, best of luck to you. People want to contact you because they're like, I'm trying to break 245 in New York. Mm-hmm. Where can they reach out to you? Where just plug all the things.
Things I mean, you got going on. I would say go to Instagram. It's at Tommy, TOMMIE underscore RUNZ, at Tommy Runs on Instagram. Everything is always there. I have the PR Project on YouTube. It's just look up PR Project on YouTube. And then I have the Run, Eat, Sleep Show. And that's on all podcast platforms.
If people aren't subscribed to the Run, Eat, Sleep Show, go subscribe. Tommy has, in 2022, I said this on the air to a different guest, and I meant it, so I don't know if you heard that episode. Tommy has the best string of guests in 2022 of any running podcast out there.
Shut up.
Look at the countdown. You'll know every single name, and they also, not just on the show, but they come on when you want them to come on. So you've had the best lineup of guests in 2022, any running podcast, period. I know it's because you work super hard and you're good at your job, but you're really good at working hard. So Tommy, thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Best of luck to you, man. In New York.
Thank you.